This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome, one and all, to the Damage Report, which we are back for. It's a Monday, and thus, Francesca Fiorentini. Francesca, how's it going? Welcome.
Hey!
Glad to have you here.
Very glad. Free Palestine.
100%. Hey, don't say radical. That's violence, okay? That's chaos.
I know, it's genocidal to say free anything.
Hey,
usually people who say in history free blank, those people are on the wrong side of history. I don't know if you've been following.
I just find it to be aggressive.
Yeah.
I think like maybe like couch is like someday a little bit free.
Right.
We'll be so absolutist about freeing or living. I don't like it.
This war is really about words.
Oh, geez. Okay. We're getting big break. Literally, as the show starts, we're getting breaking news. So we're going to see what we do out of that. But before we get to that breaking news, and perhaps to give me a second to learn the breaking news, we're going to give you a little update on the Dragonathon that we've been doing. We wanted to get 500 gifted subs to help expand the community, welcome new people in and all that. And so we set this collective goal at 500 gifted subs. And we also now have a leaderboard for the top 10 people who do the most gifting, very charitable individuals. Well, we're very close to breaking the community goal. We're at 397 as of the beginning of the show. And here is where the leaderboard stands. Original member Gabby is at 60 gifted subs. Voxella came in strong on Friday with 50. Lady F&T's there at 40. Kide at 25 at number 4. And we have a tie for 5, 6, and 7 with Jill Jedden at 20, Amemekin at 20, and Joe Gutierrez at 20 as well. Kimmy Corey Jr. coming in the number 8 spot with 15. And then there are 7 people who are tied at 10. That's Jen Welch, Moondragon, LaShawn Lewis, and Bronco, T. Underhill, Ruby Dooby Doo Dragon, and BH. Thank you to all of you. Love to see it there. We're not going to go through the whole thing. Maybe we'll do it a little bit more in a social break. But if we get to the 500 gifted memberships, you're going to ruin my hair for me by making it turn purple.
Or make it better.
I think Brett said to dye my hair like my nutritional role model, Grimace from the McDonald's Playpen place. So thank you. I think that was Brett that wrote that. So it's looking like that is probably going to happen. And then for those who have the top 5 spots on the leaderboard, we have access to a variety of special gifts. We'll talk about them more in the social break, but just wanted to give you a little update right there. Now, that said, let's respond to this breaking news in real time. We have a huge piece of breaking news when it comes to the invasion, the devastation in Gaza. Hamas has apparently accepted a ceasefire proposal, according to Al Jazeera, put forward by Egypt and Qatar. Hamas said that the head of its political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, told the Qatari prime minister and Egyptian intelligence minister that the militant group had accepted their proposal. And so here are just a few of the top line components of this. Bear in mind that Israel has not fully agreed to it yet. They were a party to it, but they haven't agreed to it. So it would be the release of between 20 and 33 hostages over several weeks in exchange for a temporary ceasefire and a release of some amount of Palestinian prisoners as well. So there's a lot there that is still vague, but obviously having the two parties to the conflict, or at least one group, the remnants of which are still in the area that's being utterly bombarded, I suppose, is an important part of it. Now, it seems to me, it feels a little bit kind of like the whole border deal that theoretically you're helping to craft it, but there's no guarantee that you'll actually support it in the end. And we have to see if those components of it change over time. And also, when you say temporary ceasefire, is that literally several weeks? And bear in mind, this is coming out at the same time, the same day, when Israel had warned about 100,000 Palestinians living in Rafah that they needed to get the hell out of there, signaling that an invasion was imminent. And so exactly where they're supposed to go when this is basically like the last lingering holdout, Who the hell knows? But Francesca, what do you make of all this?
I mean, honestly, this flies in the face of some of the narrative that we've been hearing from IDF propagandists that Hamas has been unwilling to do any kind of ceasefire negotiations. What they actually don't specify is that there's never really been an offer of ceasefire from Israel. There has been a, you release all the hostages and then we'll stop bombing. That's not a ceasefire agreement. That's not a negotiation. It is, we will cease the fire so that we can actually release hostages. And so that needs to be a first step, and it's always been a first step. And it was the only time that hostages actually were freed in this 7th month long, what I would call a genocide. And so would 57% of Biden voters call a genocide. It's when there was a ceasefire first. But Israel keeps on gaslighting us and telling us that it's Hamas that has been unwilling to create any kind of negotiation, when that's not true. And they have always said that they will, if the firing stops, if the bombing stops, they would be willing to release hostages. Now, here's the thing. We have to see whether Israel would even go along with this, right? Because Israel is on the precipice of an invasion of Rafah. They've been bombing homes and apartment buildings and places where people, including women and children, have been sheltering last night and the night before. Every single day, there are more and more shelling and reports of civilians being killed in Rafah. So all signs point to the fact that this Rafah invasion is already underway. And again, as you mentioned, all those leaflets are just sort of warning, like, hey, leave. Where? Can they go through Egypt? No, they can't. What they're telling them is to leave and go to Khan Yunis, which is the city up north, which is completely devastated. There are no hospitals. There is no infrastructure. There is no nothing. It is literally just rubble. So yeah. The question is where to. Meanwhile, the north of Gaza is in full famine. So again, it feels like a little bit, John, that this is like for the history books. It's like, well, Hamas agreed, so at least they won't have that propaganda line to lean on as they continue to murder civilians.
I mean, look, they can easily throw out they can ignore it, or they can say that they're agreeing in bad faith, which I don't know, maybe in some components they are. So I don't think this is necessarily putting them in as difficult a rhetorical position as you might imagine, but yeah, when you think about, like, you talk about how utterly devastated the north of Gaza is. We've seen estimates of, what percentage of buildings are even standing, let alone critical infrastructure, like you said, hospitals and those sorts of things. And they're already experiencing a famine. And now you're saying that best case scenario, you send close to 10% of the entire population of Gaza back up to the area that already doesn't have the resources or food to sustain the few people remaining there.
Right.
How is that supposed to work? Or is it that it's not supposed to work? And who cares? Because these aren't really people. So what does it matter?
Mm-hmm. And it is in Netanyahu's political interest to keep on with the war and the invasion. Biden always says that the invasion of Rafah would be a red line. But have we seen a single red line from Joe Biden on Netanyahu and this extremist government that even leading Democrats like Chuck Schumer say is extremist? We need new elections in Israel. When? You need a ceasefire is what you need, my dude. You need a ceasefire 6-7 months ago. But they still can't procure that.
That's a thing that would have to happen now, whereas you can call for elections and that just happens at some point or whatever.
Exactly.
So I don't think that Joe Biden is going to establish a red line, but my advice to him would be that if you are going to establish a red line, write it in colored pencil, because you're going to be erasing it in the very near future to place it a little bit further out, and you're not going to want any lingering residue of like Sharpie or anything. So anyway, look, ostensibly a slightly positive development, but it's like Hamas agreeing to it is one of the least consequential parts. Like the force that's invading and occupying and devastating the area seems more relevant, but we'll see what ends up happening with that.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Yeah.
With that said, we want to turn from the conflict to the continued brouhaha here domestically over the fact that some young people don't like what's happening there for whatever reason. So let's turn now to this. So I hope that that is not the first time that you're seeing that video occurring at a Mississippi university with a group of students. I'm gonna say mostly or all frat students because of every bit of visual evidence that we have. Taunting, shouting at, yelling racist slurs and acting in racist fashions towards protesters who dare to oppose the devastation of Gaza. We're gonna show you a little bit more video. And it's gonna show you some explicitly racist attacks as well as attacking, I guess the weight of one of the protesters wasn't acceptable. Like if you're gonna be an activist, you have to be in a certain type of physical shape or else the frat boys will have a problem with it. So take a look at this.
Lizzo!
Okay, so every one of those guys, and I think they're almost all guys, there are some women in the crowd, but they're not in the front row. Probably a good idea for their future job prospects. That are so angry with the fact that that woman doesn't want innocent Palestinians to die and holds that position while daring to be a black woman, that they have to shout out Lizzo, I guess the only other black woman they're familiar with. Or again, she is not physically attractive enough for them, so her political opinions are worthless and she should shut up and go away. And all of this is happening, Francesca, while they know they're being filmed. There are cameras pointed at them and they are perfectly comfortable doing all of this racist stuff, including shouting things like, who's your daddy, take a shower, shave your legs, throwing water bottles at the protesters. And as you saw in that first case, we can maybe go to this screenshot of the guy that I'm gonna say might be Steven Crowder's younger brother. Making monkey faces and dancing like a monkey at the black woman. Because there's something wrong with her and that needs to be pointed out. The fact that he is willingly letting himself be videotaped, engaging in racist mockery of an anti-war protester. He's the good guy in his mind and she is the bad person, that whole crowd. And by the way, like, if you have an instance where an individual is standing against a crowd of those mocking them for wanting fewer civilians to die, it is amazing to me that the crowd thinks they're the hero in that story. I don't know, like I'm reminded, honestly, I don't want to be a nerd about it, but I'm reminded of like Captain America's Last Stand and Endgame. Like you're just ringed by all of this insanity and you don't back down. You take it all because that's how much you care about the issue that you're pushing for. What do you make of this?
I mean, I think it's pretty incredible where the cops are, right? They're surrounding her. They're not surrounding them. The protesters yelling, these counter protesters yelling racist things. And the cops have been on the side of white supremacy, on the side of violent counter demonstrators, actual infiltrators this entire time. So to me, it's in addition to the out and out racism, which I kind of, you know, it's like, this is a dumbass college kid who's clearly a racist, whatever, he's gonna have to live with that. To me, it's the police behavior surrounding this one woman versus dozens of counter protesters. But more zooming out more broadly, I really have to ask some of the liberal Zionists out there who somehow think that Israel and the Israeli government are on the right side when they have bedfellows like these racist students here, when they have bedfellows like Lauren Boebert and Republicans and Mike Johnson and those who are gonna defend Israel. What does this version of Israel stand for? It is racism. It is ethno-nationalism. It is supremacy. And it is a certain kind of shade of supremacy, but it absolutely is white supremacist in and of itself. It doesn't mean that Israel can't be better and cannot change and cannot be different and cannot be truly democratic. And it's really important to understand, in this country, in the United States, the people who get doxed, who lose their jobs, who are disciplined the most when it comes to standing for Palestinian human rights are, of course, Arabs and Muslims and Palestinian Americans themselves. But women and people of color specifically, people of color, especially Black Americans, will always be painted as anti-Semitic, that they are somehow uniquely anti-Semitic. Everyone's Louis Farrakhan to them, and like they have to be disciplined the hardest. And so let's remember all of the ways the female presidents who have resigned because of the false allegations of anti-Semitism, the DEI programs that are being criticized somehow now because people want genocide to stop. This is all part of a right-wing agenda to undermine liberal colleges, ostensibly liberal colleges, that somehow now are throwing down with false allegations of anti-Semitism. It is very chilling.
100%. Yeah. And to that end, I'm not going to go on like a big rant or whatever. I'll just briefly just remind everyone of what I constantly do. The way that the media, the labels they apply to things are one of the most important things about what they do. And the fact that they don't define them, they just apply them and you're supposed to accept them. And most people do is why it's so important. When you label these protests as anti-Israel, that is not journalism. That is propaganda. Mm-hmm. That is all that is. They are not against Israel. In no more way than the many, many people in Israel that are Jewish and don't approve of Netanyahu and his government. Are they anti-Israel? Okay, New York Times reporters, label them as anti-Israel then. Because the only qualification is opposing a particular military strategy of a particular government. So just to be clear about that, and I want to be consistent too. When we're criticizing this reaction of the protesters, if there are counter-protesters and one of them shouts out something racist, that does not mean that everyone in the counter-protest is racist.
Of course.
If someone had a sign, that does not mean that everyone is wrong. But the issue here is, what was that entire group? First of all, this is at Ole Miss. Like, does anyone think that this was like a principled stand about October 7th? Does anyone think that? Come on. No.
They're serious
they
about
like
releasing
the hostages.
They like the
idea of shouting down lib protesters.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, they're no, jumping those guys on the bandwagon.
Those guys really want the hostages to be released.
Yes,
that's what this is about.
This is a green light to jump on protesters for standing up against, I mean, it could be anything. Right now it's genocide, but BLM, LGBTQ plus rights, Medicare for all, who name it, doesn't matter. This Black woman is a stand-in for everything that they don't like, which is shut up and go along and stop, whatever. Stop yelling and chanting about things that you don't like. Just like, that's what this is.
Yeah, and look, I will say a corollary to the, if you are in a crowd, and one person shouts out something bad, that does not make everyone wrong. There comes to be a critical mass where you have that crowd and the entire front three rows are there to jeer at the Black woman. That's what they're doing. That's why they're there. They're shouting that she's Lizzo and that she's fat and she's a bitch and she should shut up and all the racism and all that. And at a certain point, if you're in the fourth row and you stay in the fourth row, just join the front three rows because you're one of those people now. At a certain point, when that is clearly the point of the organization, this is not one person at Columbia with a sign that is immediately denounced by all the people. This is Charlottesville. This is people in lockstep shouting, the Jews will not replace us. Now, they're not literally saying that, but I'm saying this is not an outgrowth from an organization. This is what it's there for. They are there to mock the Black woman for daring to speak up, for daring to exist where they can see her. That's what it's about.
Yes.
Now look, in the case of this one individual, the guy doing the monkey face or whatever, he was apparently kicked out of the frat. So that's good. I'm sure he'll have a job on Fox News or something very soon, or his own podcast, and he'll make millions of dollars because that's what the incentive structure is in America. But I also want to make clear that this is not just about those idiots, okay? Mike Collins, GOP congressman, tweeted out the video and said, Ole Miss taking care of business. And I want to be very clear. I told my production meeting, when I first saw this, I thought he saw that there were counter protests and he tweeted Ole Miss taking care of business, not knowing that some of them did some really racist. No, he tweeted out that video with Ole Miss taking care of business. He likes that Jesus. They made monkey noises at the black woman. Governor Tate Reeves says, warms my heart. I love Mississippi. Now that is at least a different Jesus video, but it's Christ. The same protest. It warms his heart, the governor of the state, to see a mass group of white men shouting racist stuff at a lone black woman. It warms his heart. And you know what? I take him at his word. I think that that does warm his heart. And I think it's a reminder of the lingering issues with race that we obviously still have in America, and not just random frat boys, okay? No. This is at the highest levels of the state government. Francesca, any other thoughts?
Yeah, last thought is it's just incredible because they're, you know, from the top on down, Democrats and Republicans are both guilty of it. The fact that you have, you know, these bills being passed that condemn slogans versus condemning anything that Israel has done in 7 months, the targeting of hospital workers and schools and children, refugee camps, right? It has meant there is a green light, not just for endless money for this endless genocide, but just anyone can jump on this bandwagon. When you have authors like Zadie Smith writing for the New Yorker, why this is really a war of words, and in Israel-Palestine, that's actually, words are a weapon of mass destruction. That is a liberal, a liberal expression of the exact same sentiment, which is these students are punching bags, that these protesters standing up against the indiscriminate murder of men, women, and children, it's fair game. And so when you're like a racist in Mississippi, you're like, oh dude, no one's gonna one kid's gonna get kicked out of his frat, big deal. There are kids that are being suspended and expelled from schools. Columbia just canceled its commencement speech because people were exercising their free speech too much. I mean, this is so dangerous, John. And I feel and I fear we're gonna see a lot of the ramifications of this play out.
I understand everything about why the media has done to the protests what they've done and why they do it. And it's shades of Iraq and all of that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
But like, as a country, if we have, now granted, not every one of the counter protests has looked like this counter protest. Some of them have been more explicitly violent. Some of them have been more explicitly Islamophobic rather than explicitly racist like this. But if we as a nation are gonna focus on what's happening on the campus, we have a group of people that are so aggrieved at civilians that they have never met and will never meet or being killed, that they are willing to risk their entire future to hopefully influence their government to save some of those lives. And then we have a variety of groups that are so angry at those people for wanting the war to end that they're throwing fireworks at them, they're chanting racist slogans at them. And we're supposed to be mad at the first group. Like, how about we take stock? If these are two indications of what the next generation looks like, I'm way more comfortable with the kind that cares about preserving life than those who want people who care about civilians who are dying to shut the hell up about it. And I don't know, maybe if I was the media, I could have that conversation. Anyway, we need to take our first break. When we come back, lots more to talk about. Don't go anywhere. God, people are requesting a purple beard. That is not what I meant as an extension on the hair. But anyway, no. If you ruin my hair, America, I'm gonna fully shave this thing. And just think about that. Is that what you want? Anyway, with that said, we got a lot of news to get to. Let's jump into this.
Are you gonna testify?
I have a gag order as to that first question. As you know, they've taken away my constitutional rights, so I'm not allowed to answer that question. This has never happened in this country before. It's a ridiculous thing. I was in Miami this weekend, and reporters are asking me questions, the same questions like you're asking me, and I have to say I have a gag order. I can't speak about it. Never happened before, ever. Number one. Number two, it's a fake trial.
Three fact checks. One, not a fake trial. If it was a fake trial, Why are you there? Just leave. It's fake. It's not a fake trial. It's a real trial. That's why you're there, actually. You're legally required to because it's real. Two, it has happened before, actually. Gag orders were not invented for Donald Trump. They've just been proven to be utterly ineffective in the case of Donald Trump.
The entire criminal justice system was created for Donald Trump,
for Trump.
John.
It
just
didn't
in the
exist
past
before.
6 months. No, nobody.
No,
you could
wasn't.
Just commit crimes. No one would face any justice.
People were committing so many crimes. There's movies about it, The Purge. So anyway, and also he can answer questions about the trial that has nothing to do with the gag order. My God, is he stupid and or a liar? But he's also in trouble. And this time the trouble might stick, they say. I don't believe them. But anyway, Trump was found today to have violated his gag order for the 10th time. And I'm not like an expert on sports, but I think the saying is, 10 strikes, you're almost out. Because he was found in criminal contempt for the 10th time. And going forward, this court, the judge says, will have to consider a jail sanction, noting that $1,000 fines will not stop him. The last thing I want to do is put you in jail, he told Trump. Incarceration is truly a last resort. Mr. Trump, it's important you understand. The last thing I want to do is put you in jail. You are the former president of the United States and possibly the next president as well. The magnitude of this decision is not lost on me. But at the end of the day, I have a job to do. So as much as I don't want to impose a jail sanction, I want you to understand that I will if necessary and appropriate. But at the end of the day, I have a job to do. And part of that job is to protect the dignity of this judicial system and blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to keep talking because I worry that if I stop talking, you'll violate your gag order again. And I will once again have to do absolutely nothing about it. That's what I get out of this. So 10 violations, 10 $1,000 fines. He was already told after the first set of violations that if he keeps doing it, he might face a jail term. And now he's done it again. And this time he's told he might face a jail term. So I think he's been backed into a corner, Francesca. I don't think he can afford to violate the gag order again. What do you think?
Do it, Juan. Just do it. Let's go. I will personally learn how to sculpt. I will learn how to make things out of bronze so I can erect a statue in your honor, Juan Merchan. Your honorable judge, Juan Merchan. I love you, dog. All right. You're my firstborn, my second. I'll change my kid's name to Juan Merchan. I say do it. Just seriously do it. I just want to see someone go there. I want to see him face any modicum of comparable justice. I mean, again, I say this and it doesn't really matter, but how many people are languishing in jail for nonviolent drug offenses because they've been deemed a menace to society should they get out and like be able to sell nugs? You know what I'm saying? It's ridiculous. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's on the trail defaming literally everyone that's involved in this trial. And it's like, no, it's fine. Yeah. And you can only imagine if he does it, how much worse it'll get. So I feel like all he's got to do is just a few hours in jail. And he would, as soon as he gets his phone back, be like, dox the judge. And then he'd be right back in the slammer. Let's go.
Look, judge, because I know you watch. Just stop. You're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. Okay. When he says it's the last thing I want to do, I think no truer word has ever been spoken. It is literally the last most important thing to him, which means that everything else is slightly less important. Like for instance, having the gag order mean something, protecting the integrity of this trial. Those are less important priorities to him than not putting Donald Trump in prison. And Trump knows all of this. Like a feral cat, he can smell the pheromones.
Right.
And he knows that they're not gonna do anything. So just stop talking about it, honestly. I don't like that he's violating the gag order, but stop lying to us, okay? Just let him violate the gag order if you're not gonna throw him in prison. Because if you are eventually actually willing to do it, then just do it now. Because it's not hypothetical if he'll do it again. It's guaranteed that he'll do it again. You look like a weenie and you make the judicial system look like a weenie. You're not getting any, I know he's doing it for the same reason that Joe Biden wants to work with the Republicans or whatever. Or bring a Republican into your administration. Surely if we act reasonably, they'll stop pretending that we're communists. No,
oh God.
No, because they don't care. Just stop talking about it. Just let him violate it. Let him send hitmen to wipe out the jurors and the witnesses and everything. If you're not going to protect the trial, stop pretending that you're going to protect the trial.
Well, Senator, will you commit to accepting the election results of 2024, bottom line?
Well, at the end of the day, the 47th president of the United States will be President Donald Trump, and I'm excited to give back to low inflation, low unemployment.
Wait, Senator, yes or no? Yes or no? Will you accept the election results of 2024, no matter who wins?
That is my statement.
Yep, that is his statement. Tim Scott is serious. He wants to be VP. There's never been a stronger indication of it. All of that stuff about respect for democracy or whatever, we're done with that. We're moving on because I think either I could be VP or I've already been told that I'm going to be VP. And that means kissing the ring, bending the knee, making the devil's bargain, whatever metaphor you want. Tim Scott is now on board with the death of democracy if that's what's required. You know, if Trump wins legitimately, which he could, then fine. Democracy prevailed and he becomes the VP. But if not, Tim Scott is fine with the big lie, the act, like just lying to your supporters, sending them to the Capitol, the fake lawsuits, all that. He is now on board. Okay. So, as a respectable politician, Tim Scott is done. That's it. We're moving on from it. Okay. And he was asked multiple times to clarify. If he wanted to add even a bit of nuance, he could. Instead, we get this.
And just yes or no, will you accept the election results of 2024?
I look forward to President Trump being the 47th president. Kristen, you could ask him multiple times.
Senator, just a yes or no answer.
So the American people will make the decision.
But I don't hear you committing
for President Trump. That's clear.
I don't hear you committing to the election results.
Here's the deal.
Will you commit to accepting the election results?
This is why so many Americans believe that NBC is an extension of the Democrat Party.
Well, I'm asking you as a potential VP nominee, will you accept to commit to the election results in this election cycle, no matter who wins? Just simply yes or no.
I expect President Trump to win the next election. Listen, I'm not going to answer your hypothetical question when, in fact, I believe the American people are speaking today on the results of the election. And if it continues for the next 6 months, we find ourselves in a great position where we get back to another century of American prosperity.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
All of that is a reminder that not only is he utterly corrupt and has no morals whatsoever, he's also not the most intelligent person in the world. That wasn't even a good way to get through that situation. Another 100 years of prosperity. We didn't have 4 years of prosperity under Donald Trump. Do you remember, Tim Scott, what happened in the last year of his presidency? Were you awake for that?
Is like a little bit of a reference to like a forever. Like we'll have a next 100 years because Trump and or his family will be in power for 100 years.
It feels like a reference to a Reich is what it feels like. Another 1,000 years of, you know, good whatever. She kept asking the question and I respect that. I like follow-up questions. But at the same time, he answered the question. He did answer the question. He answered the question the first time and he answered it the same way every other time. He won't. That's it. When you're asked an easy question about whether you are going to respect our form of government and you refuse to answer it, you have answered it. That is how the rhetorical math of that works. She needs to make clear to her audience that he is not going to respect the results of the election and that whatever comes, like I would have, don't ask the same question over and over. Say, if Donald Trump sends a crowd to storm the Capitol, will you be marching alongside them? If Donald Trump has a bunch of lawmakers lined up against the wall and gunned down, will you be okay with that? Here's some fun hypotheticals, okay? Because maybe we won't get to those hypotheticals, but honestly, I didn't think we were gonna get to a storming of the Capitol. You know, we're entering exciting times in America. Francesca, what do you think?
It's so chilling. I mean, it's wild to me that Tim Scott would say this. And I understand Tim Scott's like, maybe I'll be his running mate. Like, I've got to like keep it in line. And like all the sycophants are like, what's the line? We haven't been given the line yet. I don't know. Your guy is facing a bunch of criminal indictments. He's in court every single day falling asleep. But it doesn't matter. The question remains, this is why that, they call you guys part of the DNC. Like, no, dude. She's literally just asking you, would you accept the election results? No matter who wins. And he's saying no. The answer he is giving is no. And again, these folks can't even be considered. Like, are they? We're not even in a democracy. Like, I think the follow up question is, do you believe in democracy? Yes or no? That's the follow up.
Yeah, and the correct answer is if it results in us going to the White House, then I believe it. If not, then no. Then no. What if hypothetically Trump wins, Tim Scott becomes VP, and let's have fun and as a treat imply that we'll have a further election after that. And it's Pete Buttigieg is the candidate or whatever. And we're 6 months out from that election. And Pete Buttigieg is asked by Fox News, will you respect the results of the election? And he's like, well, you know, we'll see. It depends. And you know, maybe there'll be violence. It depends. I, Pete Buttigieg, think maybe there'll be violence, but we'll find out together. How do you think the right wing media and the Republicans would respond to that? Because that's what Trump just said. He said, if we don't win, you know, it depends on political violence. We might have more rioting, more cops being beaten to death. You know, maybe protesters being like Tom Cotton wants, being thrown off the Golden Gate Bridge to drown in the bay. You know, maybe we'll have some of that. It depends. We'll see. Can you imagine if the Democrats talked like that? And to imply that having an issue with that means that you're MSNBC, dear God, I hope that MSNBC is not like the only like bastion of democracy or whatever, because then we are screwed.
Isn't it amazing that like we're focused on the language of students on campus when they're trying to protest genocide and the right is just openly like, yeah, we're gonna do political violence and assassinations and we should kill these protesters. And the media is like, yep. Well, the protesters are saying from the river to the sea. Like, it's so scary to me. I'm very, very upset that Biden and it seems like a lot of Democrats are not more focused on this kind of language and what is going to be done should another 2021 or 2020 election, 2021 January 6th happen, then it is a concern about effing protesters.
Tom Cotton said from the bridge to the sea.
Right.
He said, throw people off the bridge if they're blocking your way. Murder, or at least attempted murder, these protesters. He said that on an interview, not leaked footage, Lauren Windsor released it or whatever. He said it in a televised interview. And I don't know if anyone other than I has mentioned that since then. But I don't know, there was a student at USC that said something I don't like. I think that discredits the entire movement. Let's move on to this other aspect of this. It is looking more and more like Tim Scott has a lock on the whole VP thing. He's now totally on for the big lie. But ostensibly, the race is still on. And Donald Trump decided to have a little bit of fun. So he had this little meetup at Mar-a-Lago and he brought all of the potential VPs there so that he could utterly degrade and humiliate them to their face as part of, I guess, trial by fire. It's basically like a frat hazing initiation. And so some of the things he had to say about these people, and I wish we had the audio, but unfortunately you're just gonna have to hear me do it. But is like openly insulting. Sometimes it's dismissive to the point where how do you stand there and take this? On Marco Rubio, he says his name is coming up a lot for vice president. He's been a senator for many, many years. That's the best thing that you can say is his name is coming up. On Tim Scott, as a candidate, he did a good job, but as a surrogate, he's unbelievable. He goes on to describe him as being boring. He literally seems to have already picked the guy for VP and he's talking about how boring it is. For JD Vance, he wasn't a supporter of mine at the very beginning. He was saying things like, the guy's a total disaster. Anyways, I got to know him a little bit. As a non-politician, he's become one of the great senators. Well, no, I give him his due. The dude used to think that you could be America's Hitler and he decided that it was better to be a servant of Hitler. Yeah. I think he's a great politician. I think that's exactly what America's politicians are best at. On Mike Lee, he said, I love your haircut. And he's a good man too, okay? Doug Burgum gets roasted. I didn't know this. He was a supporter of my two campaigns. He's a very rich man. So Doug Burgum not only is giving a bunch of money to Trump now, he apparently gave a bunch of money to Trump in the previous campaign. And Trump doesn't even know or care about him. So great job, Doug Burgum, on that.
By the way, Mike Lee, I was like, what's his haircut look like? It's just a diss at him. It's Mike Lee's basic, like he's balding.
So messed up. On Kristi Noem, this is maybe the most fascinating thing. Not for what he said, we'll get to Byron Donalds for what he said. But for Kristi Noem, somebody that I love, she's been with me, a supporter of mine, and I've been a supporter of hers for a very long time. And that's it. There's really nothing else relevant, newsworthy to talk about when it comes to Kristi Noem. We're just moving on with our life. Anyway, he goes on to say about Byron Donalds, and this is amazing. Somebody who's created something very special politically. I totally know who he is. I like diversity. Diversité, as you would say. I like diversité. Donors worth millions of dollars all want a piece of Byron. So he's, as you probably can guess from what Trump said, he's a black man. So he's done something special, super specific. And I like diversity. And then he said diversity with an accent. I like diversity with an accent. And that's all that he had to say about this black man that he's considering to make the second most powerful person in America. It's amazing, Francesca. What do you think?
Donors worth millions of dollars. This is like, is this the plot of Get Out, but Veep stakes? Like this,
this
I've
is
got a lot of people that
baby.
Want to inhabit his body. And you know, like, what is this? It's so funny if he weren't running for president.
I know. And they're all taking it because this is what you need to do to become VP. I was going to say to gain power, but you'd only be VP. It's not power. It's power that you might get if Donald Trump keels over on the toilet someday. But other than that, no power. And by the way, maybe he'll send a mob of people to kill you. That might also
happen.
That's
true.
That's fun. Anyway,
I still think it's going to be, I think it's going to be RFK still. Sorry, I know we're about to wrap, but
look, if I
sorry,
probably choose RFK because I think that would help him more.
Yeah, I think he would choose him.
But anyway, okay.
And RFK has no scruples.
No, well, I mean, I don't know about anybody in this list. I mean, Byron Donald is very special. I did hear that once. Anyway, we need to take a break. We'll come back. Lots more to talk about. Okay, apologies in advance for the next video we're gonna play, but there's some fun stuff to come after it. Unfortunately, first, this.
And how about our US Border Patrol?
Oh, that's a great list.
They care about America.
How about the guys that cleared out Colombia? I'd like to add them too. Whatever you, I mean, but it, yeah, it's probably more likely to go to Paul Pelosi, Susan Rice, and Gavin Newsom. So I think your list is correct, but a little off brand for Big Joe. Rachel. Yeah.
Well, maybe Paul Pelosi needs the hammer instead of the metal.
Well, it's metal.
I'm like supposed to like make a joke or something. That was Fox News. And those two reprehensible ghouls, those utterly disgusting, pathetic worms of hosts, are making a joke while talking about the Presidential Medal of Freedom being given out. It wasn't enough that Pete Hegseth is like, oh, they'll probably give it to Paul Pelosi for surviving an assassination attempt, having his skull cracked open. And thank God they cleared those kids out. I was terrified by the fact that there were protesters. Thankfully, somebody stifled their free speech, which I don't care at all about. That wasn't enough. Rachel Campos Duffy, who is garbage in human form, said he needs the hammer. A person from their side, from their ideology, deranged, but agreeing with them on politics, goes and tries to murder Nancy Pelosi, doesn't succeed through just a miracle of bad timing, and instead nearly murders Paul Pelosi. Paul Pelosi, that's it. That's the only part of the story for him, is that he was almost murdered. And they have not passed up an opportunity to mock the fact that he was almost murdered ever since then. So if you are a potential assassin on the right, you watch Fox News and it's a joke. Hey, you know, if you do it, maybe they talk about you and what you did from now on. You get a little glow up from Fox News for trying to murder your political opponents. Like, seriously, I understand that we have free speech or whatever, so they can say literally whatever they want. But isn't that the sort of thing that would have caused you to be fired 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Mocking the victim of an assassination attempt? Like, if, I don't know if CNN was around at the time, but like if they mocked Reagan, like for almost being killed, or Brady, like,
yeah, no.
Like, I honestly don't even understand. Like, we hypothesize about a dark place that our country could go to, and we're already there, that you can do this on cable news, and you will be paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, to mock the survivors of political violence. It's amazing to me, Francesca.
I mean, right. And look, if he had been killed, they wouldn't make these jokes for a year. And then they would. And then they would, because he lost. It's weakness. I mean, they think it's funny because they're the victors. He's the victim, and that's it. And here's what I'll say, it's a little unconventional, but I'm really pissed at Nancy Pelosi around all this political violence stuff, because I have heard Nancy Pelosi say more about the protesters outside of her home demanding that she do more to stop Israel from murdering Palestinians and calling them Russian, you know, trolls and stooges and paid by China. I've heard her more speak about these protesters than she's ever talked about the right-wing political violence against her very own husband. She had a press conference, she talked about it, but then she squirreled it away, almost as if she's playing into the idea that it made her look weak, or that, oh God, we don't want to talk about it too much. The answer to political violence is not to tiptoe around the political violence. It is to call it out. It is to remind people of it. But instead, she's too focused on these nonviolent protesters who, and this was pretty funny, rented a bunch of horse manure, or just got a bunch of horse manure and put it outside of her home. I love that. I love that move. I don't know if you can rent it. You have to give the horse manure back after you rent it. But the point is,
I don't know that they take secondhand horse manure, but I understand what you're saying. And yeah, look,
have you really heard her say that much in defense of her own husband?
And she's talked about it a couple of times. I am assuming it is deeply traumatizing to narrowly escaped being murdered. No, you're right to point out that, you know, in these issues, obviously she's very often in the wrong politically. In this particular story, she and her family are the victim. And it is amazing to me that you can make money, not just on like Rumble or whatever, Kick or whatever, on Fox News, just mocking the victims of political violence. It is amazing. And I hope
that's why they get paid the big bucks, John. I mean, this is incredible. It's not only you know how much money they're making?
Oh, you know, tons of money. And you know, as they help to push America down a path where people feel more and more free to engage in acts of political violence, I hope, honestly, that they and their families never have to experience anything like the Pelosi's had to experience.
Yeah.
Okay. As they try to make that more common. Okay, let's lighten things up to end the first hour. Let's jump into this.
Laughing. Joking. It's just a conversation among friends. Imagine if the president were Donald Trump. Imagine if I were standing behind the podium. You'd have Jim Acosta screaming, "Are you going to take the student loans from the anti-Israel protesters?" John Carl, right on cue, "Will you withdraw support from any anti-Israel protester?" And they wouldn't stop until we disavowed the support of every student in the country. Where is the adversarial press?
Yeah, that's Mark Hamill, and it was Star Wars Day. You madman. What are you talking about, Kaylee McEnany? Like, I know we often will throw out these hypotheticals. Can you imagine if it was the other side? Well, if you had been doing a press conference, Kaylee McEnany, and you had brought out Mark Hamill to talk about Star Wars, I can imagine that. And I don't think it would be a big issue. I mean, it's not like when Trump would come out and talk about injecting bleach as a solution to a public health crisis. Like, this is not the serious thing that you seem to think it is. And if you'd like to pivot to saying, no, we're supposed to be talking about stripping away student loans from students daring to exercise their First Amendment rights, you'll feel free to argue for why you think that cancel culture should take that particular form, why it should manifest in that particular way. But that's just Luke Skywalker, and he's just talking about Star Wars. It's not actually a big issue. Jesus Christ, what do you think?
I just love how triggered MAGA is when they're reminded that no celebrities who are at all relevant want anything to do with them. Like Scott Baio and James Woods don't count, and no one would care if they were on the dais in the White House press room. Like, nobody cares. Mark Hamill, pretty big get, pretty fun. May the 4th be with you. That's Olivia Rodrigo. Also, I'm sure I wasn't combing the right-wing media, but I'm sure they freaked out over that too. It's just like, Same with Taylor Swift. They're so mad. Like, that's truly what this is about, is them being like, ooh, they have so much fun and those people don't have rape allegations.
Like, 100%.
Why do we have all the Me Too celebs?
They're all experiencing a generalized version of what has driven Donald Trump's life for the last 10 to 20 years.
Yes.
He just desperately wants to be liked and be in that room and have all the fancy, glittery people like him. And they don't. They don't like him and they don't like Fox News. They don't want to be associated with Kayleigh McEnany. Like, that's just the way it is. And it bothers them so very much. It's just Mark Hamill, like, lighten up, honestly. And look, you know, if you get back in and maybe you become, you know, that person again, Kayleigh McEnany, press secretary, you're probably not going to be able to get Mark Hamill. But hey, you know, Gina Carano, maybe it could happen.
Roseanne good Barr. On Mandalorian. Yeah, just let Roseanne Barr.
That's pretty good, I guess, if you can get it. Anyway, Jesus Christ, these people are so unfun. Anyway, that's all the time we have for the fourth, the force, or the first hour of our show. Thank you everybody for listening and or watching. More to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.